This is the Ethanol Report. I'm speaking with Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. We have several different topics to hit on, Bob. First of all, what I'd like to talk to you about for this week is concerned is we had another grand opening of a new cellulosic facility in Iowa, and you were there. Tell me a little bit about this and what this really means as far as the future of ethanol.
Well, it was a great event. It shows, again, that our industry is moving forward. We are driving new technologies. We are continuing the evolution of the biofuels industry. And really what the event in Quad County showed is that there is a very real partnership between first generation and second generation ethanol production, because the commercialization of cellulosic ethanol is very likely going to occur initially, at least, at existing ethanol plants that already have cellulose coming into their facilities. And what Delane Johnson and the folks at Quad County were able to do is to capture the corn fiber, and then, which is a cellulosic material, and process that into ethanol, expanding their ethanol production or yields by 6%, enhancing their distiller's feed even more by further concentrating the protein. And it was a very exciting event for all of our detractors that want to believe that cellulosic ethanol is just a pipe dream. They can no longer say that that's just not going to happen. It's being produced commercially today. What everybody needs then is for the EPA to stop messing with the RFS, to leave that program in place, because it is the increased market opportunity created by the RFS that is driving that innovation. But we need that program to drive the marketplace as successfully as we are driving innovation in ethanol production technologies.
And as an innovation also is contributing to a record corn crop, as the latest report from USDA indicates, we're going to have quite a lot of corn out there.
Well, we sure are. As I was driving to the event in Galva, Iowa, at Quad County, I was passing an awful lot of corn. And USDA put a 14.4 billion bushel number out there as their projection now for the 14 corn crop. There's anecdotal evidence to suggest it might even be higher than that, 171 bushels per acre. So you've got the highest yield ever. You will have the highest crop ever. In the face of that, this administration is suggesting rolling back the RFS. It just doesn't make any sense, and I hope that they reconsider.
Also, it seems like the production of ethanol is also doing well this year and is actually, I guess, on track to be more than what EPA had proposed last fall for their volume obligations for this year, right?
Absolutely. We'll be far more than that. The last several months, we have been producing at an annual rate of about 14.5 billion gallons. We will be where the statutory level would have been, at least in production. Now, a good part of that is going to be exported, and that's just unfortunate. But the waiver authority that the agency has is on supply. It's on production capability. And clearly we have demonstrated that we could meet the statutory level. So EPA suggesting that, oh, no, we're going to, you know, roll it back to a billion gallons or more, less than what the industry is going to be producing at, just it doesn't make any sense, and it may not be legal.
Well, and at the same time, we're looking at this huge record corn crop, but corn prices are falling below the cost of production, and yet we're still hearing the food versus fuel debate, argument, and that really doesn't make any sense.
No, it certainly doesn't. Food prices were blamed on ethanol as they went up. Well, how about when are we going to see them come down? They're not. It reinforces the fact that the impact of the price of corn on food is very little, if at all, when only 16% of the food marketing bill goes to the farmer. 84% goes to energy and packaging and processing and everything else involved in getting your food to the table. That argument, the food versus fuel argument, should have been proven to be completely fabricated, but our detractors, once they get a good bumper sticker, they're going to stick with it, and despite the facts demonstrating otherwise, they're continuing to suggest that the increased use of ethanol is driving up food prices. In fact, the American Petroleum Institute has ads running in Washington, D.C. today that continue to say that the RFS and ethanol is driving up the price of food. It's ridiculous when the price of corn today is no higher than it was in 1975.
Speaking of API and these new ads, they came out this week, and at the same time, we also saw Fuels America, which RFA is part of, release their ad campaign. What I thought was interesting about this is Fuels America has one ad, full page, in USA Today. And the oil companies have a multi-million dollar radio, TV, and online advertising. That just doesn't seem very equal to me.
They've got a lot more money. We've never believed that we could match them dollar for dollar in terms of advertising. And that's why, you know, we rely on our grassroots support and why it's so important for farmers and consumers to be letting their members of Congress and EPA know that this program is extraordinarily important. You know, we rely on, but our advertising campaign is going to be more than that one page ad that we took out in the USA Today. We are launching, you know, another campaign as well in the next couple of weeks. A campaign, for example, on the radio not too long ago about how, despite what you might be hearing from the big oil companies, ethanol is not damaging your small engine and your motorcycle, and we're not hurting your boat. So we are trying to get out there in as many mediums as we can to correct the misinformation that's out there. But, you know, the oil companies are the most profitable oil companies in the world.
Well, it seems like what motivated them was comments made by Gina McCarthy recently that indicated that posed change in the rule may be an increase in the volume obligations. Is that the rumor going around?
Well, there's no question that the administration has been suggesting that they will increase the number. And I've been somewhat bemused by the fact that the comments have been, we're going to increase the number because the demand for gasoline has been going up. And the oil companies say, oh, no, you need to keep it where it was because we don't want to go up when the demand for gasoline goes up, which is kind of funny because they had petitioned EPA to lower the number because gasoline demand, in their opinion, was going down. So, you know, you want to track that gasoline demand number if it's going down, but not when it's going up. But consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, apparently, in the eyes of the oil companies. Whatever the number is frankly not our driving concern. Our concern is much more the methodology that the administration uses to justify any reduction in the number. Because if that methodology includes demand, consumption, infrastructure, the so-called blend wall, which is not allowed in the statute, that only says you can reduce it based on available supply. Supply does not equate demand, consumption, infrastructure, or blend wall. So if they do that, if they act beyond what the statute allows them to do, they will have turned this program over to ExxonMobil, to the oil companies, to what they believe they want to offer in terms of renewable fuels. The RFS was not designed to be convenient to the oil companies. It was not designed to have us blend only that amount of renewable fuels that the oil companies are comfortable selling. It was designed to drive innovation, not just in production, but in gasoline marketing. It was designed to get us beyond 10% ethanol. It was designed to be maximizing the amount of renewable fuels used in this country, not minimizing it. So that's what we're going to be watching very carefully, and consumers across the country should be as well.
And that's Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. I'm Cindy Zimmerman with the Ethanol Report.